So Samuel F.B. Morse, who we know from the Morse code and from his invention of the telegraph, was actually a highly accomplished painter. And he really thought that he could go abroad to France and bring back for an American audience the greatest hits of the Louvre Museum. In fact, if you think of the 19th century and the availability of color images of, let's say, the Mona Lisa or a Raphael painting, you really didn't have access to that as a 19th century American audience.
I'm going to interrupt you because that's interesting to me because, you know, the same thing happened in music. There were certain composers who would go to a Rossini opera and then come back and do a Fantasia on the piano, and they would tour around making money so people could hear the melodies and see if they wanted to go.
That's very interesting. So Morse was actually commissioned by American collectors to make copies of some of the paintings in the Louvre. So that was the impetus for his voyage. But when he got there, he basically went around the Grand Gallery of the Louvre and looked at probably more than 1,000 paintings to select his own personal idiosyncratic choice of the works from the Louvre that he thought would most communicate his message as a teacher and an artist and expose American audiences to the treasures of the museum. So he assembled this kind of fantasy gallery with 38 paintings and 2 sculptural works, portraits of his friends, including James Fenimore Cooper and the sculptor Horatio Greeno. And this was a sort of calling card of his achievement as an artist, but also represented his teaching methods and his desire that American audiences would come to know European painting.
But I gather the audiences didn't quite get it, huh?
Yeah, so he decided that he would roll up this canvas that he spent 2 years painting. He really felt that it was going to be his great achievement. He would roll it up, ship it to New York, finish painting it in New York, finish all the frames around the paintings and put in the figures, and that he would debut it as a single painting exhibition, which sounds strange to our ears, but was very popular at the time. You would set up gas lights and a whole stage proscenium, and you would charge probably about 25 cents admission and hope that people would come, and therefore you would recoup some of the expenses. It's painting on speculation as opposed to painting by commission. So he set up a space to exhibit the painting in New York, and we think about 12 people came each day over the course of the exhibition. When you think about somebody who did this successfully, we have a copy of a sculpture by Hiram Powers of called The Greek Slave. And that was a scandalous nude sculpture. And they charged 25 cents for admission and made $4,000. So this is the extent to which Morse's painting really didn't get the public audience that he could have expected. Critics liked it and thought it was very clever. They had never seen anything like this type of painting. Although there were French artists who did it, there was not an American tradition of painting a greatest hits gallery.
So he truly is, this is the only American artist who's done this?
This was his innovation, and I don't know whether people tried to do it subsequently. They probably looked at his model and decided that it wasn't appropriate for American audiences, that there just wasn't the kind of appreciation for the masterworks that Morse expected there was going to be. Now, this is fortunate for us, particularly speaking on the radio, because had Morse been more successful with this painting, he probably would have gone on to paint much more in the way of monumental works of art. But the disappointment that people didn't come to see it meant that he focused his energies on the telegraph and on Morse code. And so I think of the painting as a kind of a corollary to the telegraph and Morse code in that it's a shortcut way of communication. So if you wanted to see all these paintings in the Louvre, you would have to spend hours of searching them out. And what Morse has done is he's provided them all in one space and in a rapid way.
He's sort of ahead of his time, sort of a virtual gallery type thing that you could go to the internet now and see these paintings, but instead he did it with a brush.
That's absolutely right. And actually what we're doing in conjunction with the exhibition is creating an opportunity for people to vote on works of art from the Amon Carter's collection in a virtual gallery on Facebook and to make their own gallery of invention. In fact, Morse was basically playing curator at the same time as he was faithfully representing the works of Raphael, Titian, the great masters, mostly of Italian painting, but some French artists as well.
So there's going to be some other artwork displayed along with this piece, correct?
Yeah, so the painting is on loan to us from the Terra Foundation in Chicago. The exhibition consists of the one work of art, the Gallery of the Louvre, as well as a study that Morse made in preparation for the painting. And it'll travel to 9 locations nationally and internationally. And what's fun about it is that the curator at each location can do whatever she wishes with the exhibition. So what I have chosen to do is to add to our display works from our own collection that deal with the museum or the gallery experience over time. Because I think part of what Morse is trying to do is show how these were spaces for teaching, for artists to copy. And today, they're spaces where mimes are performing and celebrities can be cited, and as well as artists copying and some of those traditional usages of the museum. So this is an opportunity for us to see works of art from the collection that don't often get displayed. And it's a great combination of photographs from historic to contemporary, as well as engravings and works on paper, other works on paper. And we could choose how we wanted to display the painting, and I wanted to give our visitors a sense of what a single picture exhibition might have looked like. And short of bringing in potted plants and gas lamps and all, and building a giant stage set for a work of art that will be visiting us for 3 months, our graphic designer drew a line drawing rendering of what it would have look like to have this important stage set surrounding the painting. And that's how we've installed it. It's actually on a slightly three-dimensional vinyl surface. And so you have a sense of the stagecraft that went alongside the painting. I should add that part of the reason the painting probably wasn't successful with the public is at the same time, there were serpent displays and all sorts of other exciting things going on in New York City for which you could also pay 25 cents. So you can imagine that as great as the painting was, 25 cents to pay for it when you had to decide whether you were going to see a pit of serpents or the great masters of the Louvre, might have been a difficult decision. I think part of the reason we're able to appreciate it is we can see all of our favorite paintings. We know the Mona Lisa.
Right.
And so it's a kind of art history study tool that for us today, and we can look at on the internet and click on the individual works of art and say, oh, that's a Raphael or that's a Titian. It's a big painting. It's 6 feet by 9 feet approximately. And actually, when the Terra Foundation came to watch the installation, we had 6 guys lifting the painting onto the wall, and they looked at my installation in this giant stage proscenium, and they said, wow, the painting looks big here. And I said, well, everything's bigger in Texas.